Good evening and welcome to episode 5 of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Tonight I have a fascinating interview with Dr. Alan Goldhammer. He is the director of True North Health Center in California. This is a center where people check in for anywhere from a few weeks to up to a year for water fasting and transition into a plant-based diet so that they can get off of their medications, cure their diabetes, reverse their hypertension, and get rid of their arthritis and make themselves healthy. Dr. Goldhammer is a doctor of chiropractic and osteopathic medicine. He's a co-author of book The Pleasure Trap, Mastering the Hidden Force That Undermines Health and Happiness, along with Dr. Douglas Lyle. He's also the principal investigator of the landmark study Medically Supervised Water-Only Fasting in the Treatment of Hypertension, as well as Medically Supervised Water Fasting in the Treatment of Borderline Hypertension. It's fascinating how he can admit patients, do a water fast, get them off their diabetic medications or hypertensive medication, in addition to weight loss, and make them happy and healthy individuals. He has a staff of 4 physicians, a total of 48, and I think there are 50 beds there. You'll learn more about it during this interview. This is a wonderful way for people to take back their health, become more active, and get off their medications. So I hope you enjoy this fascinating discussion.
Dr. Goldhammer speaking.
Hi, this is Jamie Delaney. How are you doing, Dr. Goldhammer?
Doing very well, thank you.
It's a pleasure to finally get to speak with you. I took Pam Popper's wellness class and heard your lecture and was highly impressed and want to find out more. I'm a plant-based cardiologist myself, trying to walk the walk and get my patients plant-based, so I have a lot to ask you.
Absolutely.
So, the thing that interests me most is how do you get people to your camp? Tell me a little bit about True North Health and what's it all about, because I this podcast is basically a plant-based wellness podcast, and I'm an endurance athlete, so there's a little bit of everything. So, I'll let you
fill. Well, True North Health has been in operation now for 30 years. We have about 1,000 new patients a year that come through our inpatient program, which focuses on a nutritional medicine approach. So we use a vegan, SOS-free diet, and when appropriate, medically supervised water-only fasting. We treat a lot of diabetics, hypertensives, and autoimmune patients, as well as healthy people that are looking to stay that way. Our staff includes 11 clinicians, 3 of which are medical doctors, 5 are chiropractors, a naturopath, a clinical psychologist, some health educators, as well as, all the support personnel and office staff. So we have 48 employees. We run about 50 inpatients at a time all year long. We have our inpatient and outpatient offices all in one location, as well as our True North Kitchen food service, which provides food for our staff and the people staying here, as well as for the community. So we call ourselves a residential health education program because our focus is patient education. The way it works is a patient is referred to us. They go online, fill out their registration forms, which gets us all their medical history information. We do a free phone consultation with anybody that's interested in determining if the kind of things we do might be helpful. If it is, they come in, they all see one of our medical practitioners for a review of their history exam, appropriate lab. They're seen twice a day by our staff doctors during their stay for rounds, evaluations, and support. We have 2 live educational programs each day that ranges from yoga, meditation, body use, to cooking classes, to lectures with our staff doctors, which includes myself, Dr. Lyle, Dr. Clapper, et cetera. If they're on a water fasting program, they stay on site. If they're on a healthy eating program, of course, then we get involved with exercise and taking advantage of the things available in the community as well. We have an extensive self-paced DVD program they can go through on subjects that they have interested in between the classes. And then in the evening, we do rounds again and make sure everybody's alive and answer their questions, and the day starts again the next day. Patients are sometimes with us for as little as a week. Sometimes they're here as long as a year, depending on the condition, what we're trying to accomplish, what has to be done. With water-only fasting, that ranges from 5 to 40 days, and it's always followed by a period of at least half the length of the fast for refeeding so they can be stable when they go home and make us look good. We do specialize in treating people that we expect to have good outcomes, so we're very selective about who we bring in. We bring in people that we expect to do well and hopefully have the ability to comply with the diet and lifestyle changes long term.
So, I know, Dr. Popper, who's a, wellness-based, mm-hmm. makes some referrals to you, but do you get, local cardiologists, local referrals? Who makes the referrals? Is it patients that are really right. seeking to get better on their own, or is it the doctors make a referral?
50% of our people come from outside the state of California, and 15% come from foreign countries. Because we're one of the few places that do medically supervised water-only fasting, physicians that are interested in their patients undergoing this treatment don't have a whole lot of choices, so we end up getting referrals from physicians all over the world. I am on the faculty at a number of naturopathic and chiropractic colleges, and I do grand rounds once a year at each of these schools. Their students often come in and participate in our doctor training program. They come for a month's rotation as part of school, where they come for a one-year residency if they're in the Indy residency program, and everything in between. We see about 30 physicians a year that train here. When they get into practice, they oftentimes do refer us their patients that are appropriately selected for fasting supervision. We have dozens of doctors that regularly refer patients throughout the year, and they also find out about us because I lecture at both of the schools as well as to many of the programs like Dr. Popper offers. Also, Dr. Clapper on our staff does a lot of national speaking. They've read our book, The Pleasure Trap, or they use our cookbooks, the Health Promoting Cookbook or the Bravo Cookbook. We get thousands of people each month at our website at healthpromoting.com, and they read our articles and may decide to come from that. Most are referred by either physicians or by people that have been through our program. You oftentimes it's friends or family of those people. And some, because they see media issues, like we had an article in GQ magazine on us, and there's going to be a TV show coming up on Nightline. Those kinds of mass media exposure also generate patients decide to want to do it. Or they're searching for fasting, and they'll come across our website online. So, they come from a lot of places because there's a lot of people. There's 1,000 people a year that find their way here. And, of course, sometimes people that have been here before will come back for a follow-up faster. They'll come in for their yearly exams and lab and whatever because, maybe they've lost confidence in the local doctors because of bad experiences, so they'll come here for their, ongoing medical support. We do see some local people, cardiologists. We have one of the cardiology groups in Santa Rosa actively does refer to us, particularly for hypertension. Also, a lot of ophthalmologists and other doctors like that have seen the results will refer patients. But again, most of our people are actually out of area, not so much local.
As a cardiologist, we have patients that, ischemic cardiomyopathies. How bad, what are your exclusion criteria? Is there a heart function that you say, okay, we can't do the fast. You could come and learn about the plant-based diet or,
Absolutely. Many people are not candidates for fasting the first time we see them because we're going through drug withdrawal. Many people on autoimmune disease are on high-dose steroids, and you can't just suddenly withdraw those medications. Some of our cardiac patients that are on rhythm medications or thinners, you have to be obviously very careful. And so sometimes what we'll do is we'll implement a healthy eating and exercise program and then a drug wean down program. So they will over time be able to eliminate the need for medication and make those changes. The advantage to fasting is that after fasting, good foods taste good. So many people that really can't stand eating healthy foods will relish foods after a fast. But if they're not stable enough clinically to undergo water fasting, then we'll do It may be a modified fast like on juices where they can continue their medication, or it may be just a healthy eating and exercise program. Again, with medical supervision to allow for the withdrawal gradually of the medications.
Yeah, it's, I mean...
High blood pressure medications, I mean, they usually respond so quickly. Once they're below 160 and 104, then we can transition them off their medication and then on to water fasting. Water fasting has such a profound effect on reducing blood pressure that normally they're non-intensive in short order anyway.
Yeah, I mean, even, you know, in my general practice, you know, oftentimes you throw blood pressure medicines on people, you know, one after the other, and you can't get them under control. And if for some reason they come into the hospital, you can't get them off quick enough, because once you get them out of their fast food, high salt environment, that, you know, their blood pressure, even just with a terrible hospital food, comes down very quickly. So
it gives you an idea about how awful they're really eating when then hospital food is considered acceptable. You know, the fact is people are being medicated for their diets largely and not necessarily their condition. And so as soon as you eliminate the food poisoning that they're undergoing from their highly processed, dead, decaying flesh, salty, greasy, fatty, slimy diet, you're right, within days you have to get them off medication so they crash. So that's a big problem, even on feeding programs, is getting people off medications rapidly enough. But as you know, some medications you can't withdraw without extreme caution. And so, you know, we certainly exercise that. We have several physicians here that are not idiots, so they do a good job of conservatively managing people.
Yeah, I've heard most of them speak, and I've loved every interview that I've listened to. So, you know, take me back 30 years ago. What gave you the idea, you know, let's, you know, and I know we've all had a dream of, you know, let's get out of this hospital administration environment, and, you know, we like to do what, you know, but you had the guts to do it. Tell me, you know, what led to this unique facility?
Well, when I was very young, 16 years old, I was frustrated because Dr. Lyle, who was my friend back then, who's our clinical psychologist here now, could beat me in basketball. And that really pissed me off. And so I started reading books looking for an edge so that I'd be able to beat him. And I came across some of the works by Herbert Shelton and others early on that talked about the value of a plant-based diet. And I thought, well, I'm going to adopt this, and then I'll be able to beat Dr. Lyle in basketball. And unfortunately, it completely failed, because he adopted the same diet, and he can still kick my butt to this day. It's very frustrating. So complete and total failure. But it got me interested in this. I met a doctor when I was young named Dr. Benish, who ran a facility like this. And he said it was the best job in the whole world, because the patients did all the work, the body did all the healing, and all the doctor had to do was take credit for the good results. And I thought, well, that's the job for me. And I decided to pursue that. After I finished chiropractic college, I went to Australia and attended the Pacific College of Osteopathic Medicine and studied with Alec Burton, who was the person in the world that had the most experience in using medically supervised water-only fasting. I was very impressed, because these people that I had been taught couldn't get well, and there was nothing that could be done, and take the drugs, got well, and they got well consistently. And when you think about it, as a cardiologist, you know that if you give your patients medications for high blood pressure or diabetes or autoimmune disease, if you manage those patients, you will give them a guarantee. You'll tell them if they will do exactly what you say and follow your prescriptions precisely, you'll guarantee them they'll never get well. They'll be sick the rest of their life, and they'll be on these drugs forever. Whereas when we treat patients with those conditions, we often are able to completely eliminate the need for medication and normalize their health. Now, the problem is they have to be willing to do dangerous and radical things. They have to be willing to eat well, exercise, go to bed on time, and possibly undergo fasting. But for those people desperate enough to do something that radical, the results are very predictable. And if you look at our article, Medically Supervised Water-Only Fasting and the Treatment of Hypertension, you see an average effect size of over 60 points in treating stage 3 hypertension, independent of the drug effect that they were on coming in. And there was baseline was taken on medication, follow-up was done off medication, and in their average effect size was over 60 points. There is no medication or other treatment that's been shown to be as effective as doing nothing. Water fasting is the most effective way of normalizing blood pressure that's been shown to date. And fortunately, it also works in treating type 2 diabetics. It works well in helping better improve management of the autoimmune diseases, including rheumatoid arthritis, ulcerative colitis, ankylosing spondylitis, lupus, as well as, interestingly enough, asthma, eczema, psoriasis, and these other conditions that are debatably autoimmune related.
Yeah, I've recently had a patient that has coronary artery disease, but developed a myopathy with the statin use, and then subsequently actually had psoriatic arthritis. And I got he and his wife to do plant-based, and came back and completely fixed the arthritis, psoriatic stuff was gone.
These statins, I think, are pretty horrific medications, actually, and I think it's debatable about how it actually effectively are reducing all-cause mortality. And particularly when we see dramatic results with diet and lifestyle change alone, using what I believe are powerful and potentially dangerous medications for something that is better controlled with diet and lifestyle change, I think is a mistake, and we're going to look back on it with some horror when we see the long-term consequences of the overutilization of these medications.
Yeah, I've completely made a complete turnaround. I grew up in statins when I started my cardiology training in the early 90s. Statin drugs were just coming on scene, and of course, the lower the better, the LDL, and I was aggressive, and you have to get your LDL down, and then, after reading, I read Diet Farm New America, and then I read Salt Forks Over Knives, and it's like, oh my God, this has got to change, because we in traditional medical school training, you're taught this is hereditary. The only way you're going to get it down is to use statin drugs, and you need to use the drugs or you're a bad doctor. And the people that can't take it, well, they're just SOL. And it just blows my mind now. I've made a 180 degree change on myself, and of course now I want everybody to do it, and it's the motivation factor is getting people on board. Unfortunately, when they come
you have a really difficult situation, because you're treating a wide range of patients that come to you as a cardiologist, whereas we're in a very fortunate position. We're coming to people that are coming to us specifically because they want to get well. And so our patients are pre-screened and highly motivated. So it's everybody else's doctor's best patient, the one that's really willing to do something to get well. And so it makes it a real joy to go to work every day, because we have 50 people that will basically do whatever you ask them to do. And instead of like, what do you mean I have to quit smoking or drinking or give up coffee or stop eating dead decaying flesh or whatever, I don't know how you guys have the patience to deal with all the resistance. Because I can see it's difficult even with highly motivated patients. Asking people to make these changes is the most difficult thing they'll ever do in their life. And yet, our patients get well. I can't imagine what it would be like just loading hypertensive drugs and statins on people, knowing full well what the long-term consequences are going to be for these patients.
Yeah, it's
very frustrating.
It's
even worse for, I don't know if you're doing interventional procedures, but I mean, think about the guys that are spending their whole life putting stents into people that don't want to make diet and lifestyle changes.
Yeah, it is awful. And you were also in the bind. I do diagnostic cath when needed, and and
sure.
Stress testing, but. Yeah, it comes down to the point where if you have somebody and they're not going to make the diet and lifestyle changes, and yet they're having problems, and you don't do something, legally, where the way the system is set up is just a mess.
And the problem is, though, that most people fit into that category. They don't, even if they knew the answer, they wouldn't do it. The crime, though, is that the people that would do it aren't being told, and they're being actively discouraged. And so it's not like they're saying, look, you could go on a really radical diet that you're not going to want to do, and exercise and do fasting and all that stuff, but, you're not going to want to do it. Or we can put this device in you or give you these drugs. What do you want to do? And, occasionally there are people that it's like, oh, my God, if they knew, they'd be more than happy to make the diet and lifestyle changes. That's who we treat. And the problem is those people sometimes don't even know it's an option, because they're being basically, in my opinion, lied to and misled. Into thinking that these procedures are going to somehow dramatically reduce their all-cause mortality, whereas the literature doesn't really support that for many people. What would reduce their all-cause mortality is actually getting healthy. But, the cardiologists themselves aren't doing it. It's not like it's a conspiracy. They're fat, sick, and miserable, too. So they're taking the drugs. They give it to their own families. It's just ignorance.
I'll give you a perfect example. It was in the doctor's lounge, and one of my general surgeon colleagues was talking about how he was on the Atkins diet, and he looked at me and he's like, what do you think about it? And of course, I went ballistic and started, talking about the plant-based diet. Meanwhile, an oncologist came in, And he basically turned around and ran out the other door. He didn't want to talk about it. And then a cardiologist who was overweight came in and basically and actually said, you know, jokingly, but, you know, not without thinking that, you know, well, if we fix everybody with diet, then what are we going to do? And it's like, well, you know, and... But
well, you know, the fact is that people that make a living doing bypass and putting stents in, even if they personally, you know, believe that a plant-based diet might be a better option. Like, we have cardiologists here that are doing conventional cardiology, and they make their living doing conventional cardiology. They themselves purchase food through the True North Health Kitchen. They send their wives or themselves in for this kind of care. But they recognize, you know, people are not ready to make these changes, and they don't see it as their job to get them ready. You know what I mean? Not to mention the fact that they don't particularly want to be known as quacks by the colleagues that refer them all their patients. So they keep their own habits and stuff to themselves. But, you know, I know when they know what's right, and, you know, they do the best job they can of doing high-quality cardiology, and if patients, you know, want to listen to them, they'll be happy to talk to them about the options, but they're not going to go out of their way to try to shove it down people's throats.
You know, and I guess take it in your lecture for the wellness, you know, you talked, which I never made the connection with the spinal arteries and decreased vertebral height and the, you know, the spinal stenosis and the disc disease. I mean, that just blew me away, but made perfect sense. And you never hear anybody talk about that. And of course, you always hear the orthopedic people. They send me for cardiac clearance, you know, the 300-pounders that have, you know, 8 to 8 million medications, and they're going to replace their joints. And I'll talk to the patient. It's like, it's not going to do anything. You're replacing one joint that just leads to another joint that just leads to another joint.
Well, you know, and disc disease is so vulnerable to, because you don't have blood flow. You know, it's all by inhibition. And so there's so much effect on inflammation with the diet. And I think now, I think even your colleagues are recognizing that inflammation probably plays a critical role in the development of coronary artery disease. You know, it's not just cholesterol in the diet, per se. You know, there's a lot of variables that go involved in creating the inflammatory response, irritating the animal linings, allowing stuff to plaque up and sore up and whatever. And so, and it's the diet that controls largely the inflammatory response in the body. So, I mean, there's no drugs that reliably reduce CRP, but our diet certainly does. You know, it's remarkable that if you look at acute phase reactive proteins and just monitor those changes in fasting, there's nothing like fasting. My gosh, you know, it's huge. And if you had drugs that drop people's pressure 60 or 80 points reliably with minimal side effects, I mean, they'd be worth a lot of money.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, but then again, like I said, this motivation factor, I don't know if you've seen the movie Joe the Juicer, where the Australian guy goes around and he has the juicing, and he, you know, he sees people and the people see him and they say, oh, that's a really good idea. I'm glad you're doing that, but I could never do it. And, you know, I again,
well, you know, it's amazing when people get motivated when they get sick enough and pain enough that they can't have sex anymore. Sometimes they're willing to do anything, even eat good. What I think we should be doing a better job of is, number one, publishing research that demonstrates safety and efficacy. And in that light, we have just finished a major safety study on fasting, 2,500 consecutive patients. They're all-cause mortality, complications, all the lab. We're submitting that to PLOS medicine here, and hopefully that'll put to rest the idea whether this can be done safely. So at least according to our protocol, it can be done safely. We know that. Then we need to show efficacy that, you know, all-cause mortality is reduced, people's clinical outcomes are better. We've done it for high blood pressure. We need to do it in the other related conditions. And then we need to disseminate that information far and wide so that the few people that do want to do this or the few physicians that want to learn about it are able to get access to that information. And in light of that, we have a nonprofit foundation called the True North Health Foundation, which has just been formed, has got some funding. We're putting on a compendium website, which is going to bring all of the information that's been done on fasting and detoxification together under one website. So it's easily available for researchers and the public as well. And we're also bringing on a principal investigator. We're hiring a postdoc to begin doing our data compilation. You know, we've put a lot of effort into putting in electronic medical record systems. So now we have thousands of patients' records, and every data point is searchable. So we're going to be able to start cranking out outcome data. And I think once there's enough stuff published in the literature, certainly your colleagues will be thinking, well, okay, well, maybe there's something to this. Certainly Dean Ornish's paper had a major impact, you know, just showing you could reverse coronary artery disease. back in 1990, there was still argument whether that's even reversible.
Yeah, I think it, you know, at least a lot of people will make referrals to it. And it's kind of funny because probably 7 or 8 years ago, you know, Dean Ornish, before I did Caldwell Esselstyn's, you know, Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease book, I would say, you know, okay, look at Dean Ornish's book, and you're probably not going to want to do that. This is really radical. And, you know, he even had some fish and nuts in there. But, you know, right. It's like when people would still look at me like I had 8 heads.
Ours,
you know?
Yeah. And our approach is even more difficult because unlike the McDougall plan or the Ornish plan where they're, you know, reasonably flexible, we are vegan SOS free. So we eliminate the chemicals added to the food that fool people's brain, satiety mechanisms and dopamine cascade that lead to them being fat, sick, and miserable. We treat the patients that are, you know, like Dr. McDougall says, he punishes his patients if they don't get well. He says, if you don't get well with my program, then you have to go to Dr. Goldhammer's place. So we're the punishment. He's like the emergency room, and we're intensive care. But this approach that we do, I believe, is easier in the long run because it actually gets people out of the pleasure trap.
You have to limit it. Yeah, which goes back to the pleasure trap in this, you know, moderation type camp. You know, I mean, it's so funny. Nothing in our lives do we want to do in moderation, but all of a sudden we think we can do it with cheeseburgers and Oreos. And, you know,
we tell alcoholics to stop drinking because we know that drinking beer and wine ain't going to do it. They got to stop. And we need to tell fat people they need to stop eating the sugar oil and salt that makes them fat, because just like an alcoholic can't do it by just having a little bit, fat people can't do it by having just a little bit. If they could have, they would have, but they can't because they're addicts. And addicts need to recognize the limitations of their behavioral control. And once they get off the alcohol, alcoholics do fine. And once they get off the oil, salt, and sugar, overweight people lose weight. And if they're male, they lose 3 pounds a week down to their optimum weight, and females lose 2. And it's predictable, it's reproducible. We've done it hundreds of times. It's not a psychological issue, it's a biological issue. But the psychology involves getting people to understand the truth instead of just lying to them all the time.
You mean like you can't eat pizza in little bowls like the Weight Watchers and make it work? I was like, you know, these people are amazing, though. You know, you can pay $500 for these little bowls of dog food, and people, you know, you should call them pizza, and people
absolutely
will pay the money to eat them. And, you know, it's like, it drives me insane.
I'm thinking what we need to do is, I have a pill. It's going to cost you $50,000. But this pill, we guarantee it'll lower your blood pressure, keep your weight off. Now, the problem with this pill is you have to activate it by doing a period of water-only fasting. In order to keep it active, you have to eat a vegan SOS-free diet. But you take one pill a year, it's guaranteed to give you good results. And it turns out it works just as well whether you take the pill or not.
That's a pretty good idea. When you refeed people, so the traditional person that you get them, I guess we can start by, you know, you get people there and it's like, okay, you've talked to them in and you selected them. But you have to have the people that want to run away from the reservation. What happens then?
Not so much. Usually by the time they jump through our screening, they're pretty motivated. And actually, the surprising thing is, let's say you got the typical person, they're 220 pounds instead of 160, they're hypertensive, maybe their sugars are high, they got joint pain, they feel like crap. Okay, so we talk to them on the phone, and they read our informed consent, which says nobody agrees with this, and you'll probably die. And then they decide to come in anyway. They've usually been referred by a loved one or their physician. They come in. Before they get here, we get them eating a specialized diet for a few days, fruits, vegetables, steamed and starchy vegetables, as much as they want, nothing else. So they're trying to do the diet for a few days. They get here, we do an exam, we do an evaluation, and that is different than what they've been used to because they have a physician spend an hour with them. They actually review their history. We do an exam. We get some, you know, take a look at their lab, listen to what they have to say. Then we put them on this fast. By the second day of fasting, they have no hunger. They're usually, you know, miserable in different ways because they're going through detox and stuff, but the hunger and the things they were afraid of aren't even an issue. They're with a bunch of other people that are, you know, they're doing the thing. They're hearing stories from other people that have been here a while, and they're better now, and they're, you know, it's very motivating. And then they go through the fast, and oftentimes now they start to see the miracles. Their pressure's coming down, their weight's coming down, their joint pain's going away. And so now they're pretty motivated. They're getting brainwashed with daily educational programs and tapes and videos. Then they come off the fast, and the food that they couldn't eat before now actually starts to taste good. They even like it. Now they can do some exercise. They can move around. They start to feel like a human being again. And by the time they're ready to go home, hopefully they're motivated enough to stick with it.
Well, that certainly makes good sense. So, you know, you basically answered that question. Your typical person comes in, you just kind of try to get them. What's your experience with, you know, fatty liver patients, which now are, you know, one of the leading causes of cirrhosis, even more than so than alcohol? Do you have success there? I guess you probably will when you get the fat out.
Oh, yeah. With, of course, weight loss and everything else, you get tremendous improvement in liver function, transaminase enzymes normalized. You know, it's remarkable. You know, you get these people in here with triglycerides of 17,000 that are having pancreatitis secondary to, and you know, they normalize. And blood sugars are 550 milligrams per cent. You get the patients with blood pressure, it's 220 over 140 on six medications, you know, because a lot of the people we get are the ones that are, you know, not responsive. And, you know, you either drop their pressure 100 points, get them off the medications. It's kind of hard to imagine. That's why these doctors that come in here will tell me this is the first time ever that they've seen people get well. When you think about it, getting well isn't even part of your paradigm if you're practicing conventional medicine. There's no expectation of getting well. It's just take the drugs the rest of your life.
Why aren't more of these centers popping up?
Well, I think they will be. The economics suck because insurance doesn't reimburse inpatient stay. The price point has to be low because people are here a long time. So in order to make it affordable, you know, without insurance coverage, you have to make it affordable, which we do. $139 a night, they can stay here in a private room with share bath and get all the care they need. That includes their round, you know, twice daily rounds with the doctor, and they're doing their laundry and all their meals and fasting supervision, et cetera, et cetera. So it costs less than staying at the local hotel, and yet they get the medical care. But you have to kind of do that if a person's going to have to be here for 6 weeks or 8 weeks, because if you charge a lot, they can't stay long enough, you can't get them well. So we have to keep the price point down, so that keeps the profit margin down, which is, you know, disincentive to physicians. Also, we have a lot of employees. So there's a lot of, you know, relatively intense care in order to do this safely and effectively. So it doesn't look like really attractive to people whose primary goal is to squeeze as much money out of as few people as possible in as short a time as possible. You know, if you're a physician, you say, well, let's see, I can do one procedure and generate X money, but I got to actually live with my patients and be on call 24/7 to deal with this, and my colleagues won't like me, and if something goes bad, it's hard to be defended. You can see why it's not been an overwhelming rush to go into doing this kind of practice yet. But as we publish more research and there's more and more demand, perhaps we'll see more people willing to step up and do this kind of care. Most people don't like doing call, let alone actually living with their patients, because they have crappy patients. We have really good patients. With our patients, it's a joy. If everybody had patients like us, they'd like practice a whole lot more.
I'm ready to join. So tell me the refeeding.
Come on down.
I definitely will.
Have you retired your $280,000 of student loans yet?
Yeah. Luckily for me, I'm originally from West Virginia, and when I went to medical school in 1987, my undergraduate or my medical school education cost about $5,000.
Okay, well, that's great. So yes. You're in a position you could do whatever you wanted
yes,
to.
So my daughter.
You know, those guys coming out of school today are just buried. You know, they're really forced into the system. And they're all end up working for doctor in a box or Kaiser or whatever and doing what they're told and seeing their 26 patient contacts a day. And it's not pleasant.
No, I'd rather have the satisfaction of helping people any day. Tell me about the refeeding protocol. I know you're somebody that's maybe like the moderate patient, so diabetic, hypertensive, you know, lost maybe 40 pounds, 3 week fast. What happens?
So the refeeding is really straightforward. It takes half the length of the feet of the fast refeeding minimum, and they have to agree to do that before they start. So if they're going to have it, we don't know how long the fast is necessary. Let's say we're expecting a 20-day fast. We know we need at least 10 days of refeeding. And the way it works, for every week of fasting, there's a day of juice and a day of raw food only. So let's say they have a three-week fast. They have two or three days where we'd be using juices and two or three days of raw food. And the reason, you have to gradually reintroduce food to avoid food shock and all that kind of stuff. And then we introduce steamed starchy vegetables, and then we might introduce grains and beans if that's appropriate for the patient, nuts and seeds. By the time they've done half the length of the fast, they're usually on a mixed broad-based diet just like we wanted to stay on. And they're ready to go home and continue this process. We do require, though, a 50-year follow-up. So we ask our patients to commit to 50 years of vital living. And then once they've maintained normal tensive, normal glycemic, healthy for 50 years, then they can go back and do whatever they want. We stop worrying about it.
Sounds good.
Now, ironically enough, I just did my very first 30-year follow-up. And I had a patient who came in. I saw him originally 30 years ago. He was 55 at the time. Now he's 85. And he said he came in for his checkup, hadn't seen him in 14 years. He's been doing the program. He says it seems to be working because all of his friends are dead, and one of his kids is dead. He's outlived one of his children. And he said he was going to keep his word and stick to it for another 20 years, but after that he couldn't make any promises.
Very good. And what about the, you know, what's your take on the grains? You know, I know in some people that I've actually got to go plant-based, some are unsuccessful, mainly probably because they're sneaking in oils, but a lot, I think, tend to gravitate towards, you know, grains, and then they fall back into processed grains. What's your, you know, education to patients on that?
Well, we don't use any, with people that you're trying to lose weight on, you don't use flour products, okay? So I don't think, you know, any wheat, rye, barley, any glutinous grain and refined products, we just don't use those. We don't serve them here. We don't use those. We do use some whole grain products like rice and quinoa and millet if a person isn't sensitive to grains. Many people do have problems with lectins and whatever, and they don't do well with grains, and so we just avoid those. If they can handle rice, brown rice, and they can handle those, that's fine as far as I'm concerned for most people. Same thing with legumes like lentils and black beans and whatnot. If people have problems, if they eat grains, they want to eat breads and whatever, then fine, don't eat those. We'll use starchy vegetables or something else instead. Quite frankly, after fasting, most people like good food. It's a lot easier to get them to, you know, do the right thing.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, are renal insufficient patients excluded? How do you go about those people?
Well, you have to be very careful with people that have significant kidney dysfunction. If their creatinines are over about 1.5, if their kidney function is too low, the vigors of fasting can shut those kidneys down because a lot of the detox process occurs, you know, in the blood being purified by the kidney. So what we would do in those cases is modify the program. We might do a vegetable-based juice fast, or we may just do a healthy eating program until their kidney function restores sufficiently to undergo fasting. In some cases, it won't, and those patients will not be put on a water-only fast. Not everybody can water fast. And severe kidney disease is a condition. However, I have to tell you, oftentimes, I mean, I had a patient here not too long ago with, you know, creatinines of over 5, that all we did was stop the statin meds and their creatinine levels improved dramatically.
Amazing.
So you got a lot of these people are being killed by their medication. If you eliminate the hypertension by changing the diet, you can eliminate the meds, and then you get the meds off, and then they stop being killed.
And then I guess the other group that tends to be, you know, the irritable bowel, the people with colostomies or diverticulitis, you know, oftentimes they're really resistant to changing.
Well, we tend to do pretty well with fasting followed by a health-promoting vegan SOS-free diet in those patients.
Mm-hmm. They do well.
But, you know, a lot of people have big-time psychological overlay, and they're not going to come to a place like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you are dealing with those people. I don't deal with those people. I deal with the people that are saying they're willing to do anything to get well, even eat well. And we don't make any bones about what we do. I mean, we have our informed consent on our website, for God's sake. We're very, very clear about the limitations of our knowledge. In fact, we don't know how long it's going to take. We don't know what the outcome's going to be. We don't make any promises we can't keep. And, you know, and if that doesn't scare people away, then they're usually a pretty good candidate. And also, most doctors wouldn't refer anybody to us unless they felt like they were a pretty motivated patient willing to do this kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, true.
Okay. We specialize in treating people that are going to have good outcomes. That's what we do. We leave all the poor outcomes for everybody else. That's what they can do. We just want to have the fun part, the part where you have a highly motivated patient that comes in, no matter how sick they are, gets well, and is able to stick to that program. That's gratifying. That's why people went into medicine. They wanted to help people. They didn't want to babysit people that don't want to do what it takes to get well. They wanted to actually help sick people get well or teach healthy people to stay that way. And that's what we get to do in this style of a practice every day. And it is a hugely more rewarding and satisfying practice. Now, there are limitations. It's hard to generate the same proportion of income that you might in a procedure-oriented practice. And and you know, because you have to charge people monies that they can afford to pay. But other than that, the rest of it's really good.
Sounds good to me. To turn it to, you know, more healthy individuals. I am a marathon runner and triathlete, Ironman type completer. And yes. Some of the, you know, looking at nutrition with endurance training, and I kind of thought, you know, there's a whole camp out there as far as becoming better fat burner. You know, and there's a guy named Tim Noakes who I believe he's a PhD in South Africa. You know, that talks about, and which just drives me crazy because he did a lot of good electrolyte stuff, but now he talks about, you know, eating fat to burn fat. And I just can't see where, you know, that's a good idea. I know, you know, young...
Well, let's be clear that what you do to maximize athletic performance may not always be the same thing you do to maximize health. For example, if you want to be the best NFL lineman, taking anabolic steroids might make you bigger and better and a better athlete, but it also might explain why their average age of death is like, what, 52 or something. So as far as what is going to make you the very best marathon runner, I'm not sure that I could tell you that. We have a sports medicine doc that could address those issues. However, what I can tell you is going on a high-fat, dead Dr. Atkins-type diet is not the way to build health. And there's pretty good evidence out there that plant-based diets, vegetarian-style diets, have been very effective for endurance athletes at the very highest levels. You know, there are many examples of endurance athletes that have adopted a plant-based diet and done exceptionally well. In general, I mean, you look at those, everybody from the Kenyan runners on down. So I think as far as endurance athletes are concerned, there's probably most you're going to experience benefits from adopting a plant-based diet. However, because of the increased caloric demands, you may need to use a little bit more processed foods. And as we do use, like, non-glutinous, we might use rice pastas, or we might use more soups and, you know, more caloric density in our high caloric demand competitive athletes than you might in a person you're trying to lose weight. You know, you don't just tell the athlete to eat salad and expect they're going to get enough caloric density to meet the 3,500 or 4,000 calorie load. But we don't compromise the diet. We're always using a plant-based, vegan, SOS-free diet. We just maybe use a little bit more concentrated foods to get the caloric density up.
Do you think there's anything to, you know, prolonged periods of exercise, you know, say it is, it, you know, it's not an anaerobic, but more at a aerobic pace without feeding to train the body to burn its own fat stores? Is there anything to that or not?
Well, there might be all kinds of stuff to it. I haven't actually reviewed the literature, so I don't know, you know, I haven't formed an opinion. What I can tell you is it's all academic, because as soon as you get a person on a plant-based, vegan, SOS-free diet, if they're a male, they lose 3 pounds a week, and a female, 2 pounds a week, down to their optimum weight. So whatever, you know, I really have no inclination to worry about making them, quote, better fat burner, because they tend to get rid of their excess fat spontaneously.
Right. Yeah, I was just curious.
Now, the training that we're recommending for not so much competitive athletes, but, you know, we've got some interest in you know, we try to get people doing a variety of activities, not just, say, running. We like to see them doing some running, some biking, some hiking, some swimming, using different body parts. We like the interval training, you know, where they do short bursts of high-intensity training along with, you know, longer periods of lower-intensity training. We like stretching and stability things. We like the low-tech stuff, the gym balls, the foam rollers, you know, this type of yoga, this type of activity. I can't say that I practice what I preach, though. I happen to play basketball, so I play basketball, you know, 4 times a week for 2 hours a week. It's not exactly what I'm telling my patients is ideal. But the truth is, if you can get people doing diversified activities, they tend to have less injuries and do better overall, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Yeah, it really boggles my mind. You know, I have the two camps. I have, you know, my sick and nearly dead patient population. And then I have the endurance athletes that I hang out with. But as soon as the endurance athletes cross the finish line, you know, like I just did Ironman Chattanooga, was sponsored by Little Debbie's. At the finish line, there was Domino's Pizza. And it's like these people, you know,
I know.
It just drives me insane.
I know. But the thing is, they're going to suffer the same problems that everybody does. It's mitigated by the fact that at least they're exercising. It'll, you know, they won't drop dead right away, but they're still going to plug up their blood vessels with fat and have problems. You'll see it.
Yes,
and you do. And, you know, that just happens a little bit later because exercise is good, but it's not good enough to make up for the diet. The biggest effect size is controlling the diet. And I would venture that, and again, I'm not an expert in endurance athlete training, but I would venture that you could, if they would follow your advice on diet, that they would be able to perform at or above the level that they're performing with the dead, decaying flesh and the greasy, slimy stuff too.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be with the vascular reactivity studies that have been done. You know, I just can't fathom what these people do when they eat a stick of butter, then they go try to run 50 miles.
Yeah, well, you know, what can you say? The human body is an amazingly adaptive organism that puts up with a lot of crap for a long time.
Yeah, and I guess that will lead me to, you know, the other argument that, you know, my nurse has brought up to me. You know, we see these people, they're 85 years old, living on donuts and bacon. And, you know, yeah, my argument is, well, they could be 85 years old out taking a walk, but they're basically 85 years old coming to see me and eight other doctors.
Yeah, and for everyone that's coming to see you that's still functioning, there's a whole bunch of them that are stroked out, and they're in a nursing home, but unable to talk or move, lying in their own feces, waiting for that nurse's aid to turn them, hoping that this time those debriding maggots will fall out of the festering bed sores. You got thousands of people dropping dead as a consequence, and the few that, you know, have really strong genes that manage to survive, you know, that's all great and good, but the quality and function of their life oftentimes is dramatically deteriorated 10 years, even 20 years before they actually finally die. And so we shouldn't be talking about quantity as much as quality. How well are you going to live? Are you going to live till you die? Are you going to live functionally? Can you have sex? Can you walk? Can you hike? Can you bike? Can you carry on? Or do you spend all your time moaning about your aches and pains because you've been told there's nothing can be done? And what pisses me off is they're going to say, look it, we don't know anything about, especially your rheumatologists, we don't know anything about these conditions, about what causes them. We never see anybody get well. The only thing we all agree on is diet has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, it is amazing. So
at least the cardiologists have acknowledged, you know, they might argue about what the diet should be, but at least they've acknowledged there's a relationship between what you put in your mouth and what ends up inside your vessels. So, you know, but the rheumatologists literally look at the official positions of the American Rheumatological Society that say the diet has nothing to do with arthritis.
Yeah, well, you never hear anything about it. And a lot of those patients are some of the most resistant as well.
Hey, listen, we got an EHR. We were looking at EHRs. And this one has 1,000 physician offices, okay, so it's a big one. And I asked the woman, I said, I don't see where you can record the diet diaries of patients in here. And she goes, well, why would you want to do that? I said, well, because we're interested in what they're eating. And she goes, well, we don't have any provision for that. Nobody's ever asked for it.
Well, I ask. I ask every day, and my patients eat salad, and by my data, there should be no lettuce left in Port Charlotte, Florida. But
well, see here, I get a chance to live with them, so I see what happens when they actually eat right.
You get to see.
So
yeah.
The person that tells you I can't lose weight, it doesn't matter yet. Here, 2 pounds a week down every week, down to their optimal weight, including people we've had here for a year, and it goes on for a year till they're normal weight. And so far, no exceptions. There are no people so far that I've been able to document that violate the laws of physics or thermodynamics. So there is no mystery when they're in a contained setting. And there's no BS.
How about your family? They follow the plant-based SOS?
We do. Well, my family all works here. My wife, Dr. Morano, is one of the doctors on our staff. And so she's been this way. We've been married 30 years. My son, who's 27 years old, has been absolutely wonderful for 27 years. He's he eats all of his food here at the center. He's very compliant. He's never smoked or drank or had a cup of coffee or any of that kind of stuff. So he's been exceptionally compliant. So I have two grandkids, and working and living at the place makes it easier to stay on the straight and narrow.
Fantastic. Well, you know, I'm a believer, and it's been an honor to get to speak with you. I'm looking for ways to spread the word.
I would invite you to come and pass a visit sometime and let us show you what we do and give you the grand tour, because maybe it'll inspire you when you look at the model that we're using to figure out how to do something that you might have fun with right where you're at, because God knows they could use it there.
Oh, I think I'm in. I will look forward to visiting you maybe early next year. And
Also, if you at some point, maybe we could talk about doing some collaborative research, because we are interested in reaching out, doing some compare and contrast stuff, and also having access to a cardiologist that's not an idiot would be hugely helpful when it comes to analyzing and helping us with design. You know, as we set up these designs, that we ask the right questions and that we figure out the right way to monitor and kind of, you know, you have some skill sets that would be really useful to us and might also allow you to participate in a meaningful way in getting some of this, you know, getting the right questions asked and answered.
Oh, I would absolutely love it. I'll look forward to talking more with you about doing some of those things. But yeah, that would be absolutely fantastic.
That would be great. We'd love to play with you on that level. Our True North Health Foundation is really just getting rolling, and that's what we're actually trying to do now is collect access to people that can kind of help us figure out, you know, especially outside our domain of expertise, what kind of tests should we be doing, and what's the questions we should be asking? What's the things that we, you know, would be most meaningful? We know how to get them well, but we want to figure out the best way to document it in a way that would be meaningful to your colleagues.
Yeah, that would be absolutely fantastic. There's nothing more than I would like to be able to, you know, present the data and say, see,
yep.
Told you.
And the other thing that would be good for us is, you know, again, having a cardiologist as a co-author adds some credibility to the thing. So that would be really good. I think there's probably a number of ways that we could be mutually beneficial.
I'm all in. So
I'll look forward to getting to know you more. And you have any questions at any time, you give me a call. And I'll look forward to seeing you when you get a chance to come out here.
All right. I appreciate it so much. Thank you so much.
Very good. Nice to meet you.
All right. Good night. Nice to meet you. Well, I hope you enjoyed the interview. This was very exciting for me. You know, while it may seem radical to interrupt your life and be admitted to a center where you fast and then refeed, it's not nearly as radical as having a surgery for obesity or bypass surgery or angioplasty or chemotherapy for a cancer. So, you know, I think that this people need to know that there is a way to get off your medications and that you're not tied to them forever. You know, just to reiterate, he does advocate a plant-based, no oil, no salt, no sugar type diet after the period of fasting. I think it's fascinating that he and his whole family follow it. If you've seen his picture on the website, he looks, you know, 20, 30 years younger than he is. So, you know, he walks the walk. And I think that means everything as a medical profession. If you go to a medical profession that doesn't look healthy, I think there's a problem. I hope that in the future I can be part of some of his research with the foundation so that, I can, you know, help publish the successes of nutrition as medicine, especially in the cardiology world. You know, so I'll encourage you to check out his website, True North Health, and read his book, The Pleasure Trap. It's very interesting and informative. Well, back at my office, we've completed week 3 of our plant-based nutrition course. Everyone seems to be enjoying it. People are trying the menus that we've discussed, and overall, I think it's a success. We're going to start, we have 3 more sessions of this particular group, and then we'll start another session with a whole new group. I also gave a talk at the Foot Landings Health Fair. That's a local athletic footwear store in Punta Gorda in my hometown. They had a health fair and had some different people there, massage and different fitness table set up. We did a 5K run, and then I gave a little talk on plant-based nutrition, so it was quite fun. I wore my no-meat athlete running jersey, so that was a good time. Today, I actually gave a talk and a cooking demonstration at Charlotte County School District's Shape Up for Charlotte County. It's a health fair that they have for current teachers and retired teachers for health awareness and to become more fit. And so we provided three different kinds of plant-based salad, a rice and bean salad, a bok choy salad, and a macaroni salad, all of which were no oil, and completely plant-based. We also had a black bean brownie for dessert. We put some books on display, which I recommend at the office. And so that was a whole lot of fun. You know, it's my wish in the future that Charlotte County, Florida, could be one of the healthiest plant-based counties in Florida. So we'll continue to keep working to that goal. Thank you again for listening to my podcast. I can be reached for questions or comments at jamiedulaney@gmail.com. That's jamiedulaney at gmail.com. Continue to, or I would encourage you to continue on your plant-based journey. Eat plenty of fruits, vegetables, and whole grains. Don't forget to get out in the sunshine. Until we meet again, here's to your health.